Hey, folks, I know there are lots of business owners who listen to this show. Maybe some of you never planned on running a business, but now here you are. One thing you've always got to keep in mind is how much you're spending on your operating costs. That's one of the first things we had to keep in mind with WTF. And with things costing more today than they did when we started, you want to keep your expenses down. To reduce costs and headaches, be smart and use NetSuite by Oracle, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, and HR into one platform and one source of truth. Reduce IT costs, cut the costs of maintaining multiple systems, improve efficiency by bringing all your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors. By popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/WTF for more. That's NetSuite, NetSuite.com/WTF.
Lock the gates!
All right, let's do this. How are you, what the fuckers, what the fuck buddies, what the fucksters, what's happening? I'm Mark Maron. This is my podcast, WTF. I'm a little punchy. I'm a little tired. I was up late last night. I'm actually recording this a couple days shy of when it's supposed to go out. So again, if anything dramatic or awful, why don't I just rephrase that? So all the shit that's dramatic and awful that's going to happen in the next couple of days, I might not have a reaction to it. I don't necessarily always have a reaction to it publicly anyways, but if it gets real bad, just know that this might be happening in a two-day vacuum. All right, that's all I'm saying. Like, if I should be here saying, like, oh, God, this is it. We all knew this day would come. I don't even know if we can get this up. I don't even know if the grid is working anymore. I don't even know. Oh, God, I knew this would happen. Oh, God, I gotta go. They're here. Oh, my God. I'm going to go in the attic. If that happens, I might have missed it. But let's hope it doesn't get that bad. Anyway, Joe Coy is on the show today. Joe Coy is a comic. He's been around for a bit of time. I've known of him. I knew he was out there. I knew he was big. I didn't know him. I don't even think I had met him, really. Maybe once. We discuss it. But I ran into him in Montreal, and I'm like, all right, I'd like to talk to you. I'd like to know your story. So Joe Coy is here. Joe Coy is a big act. He's a big act. He's currently on his Break the Mold World Tour through the end of the year. And he puts it out there, folks. Yeah, he's a worker. So I was in Chicago all week. I've talked to you when I was there, but I just left there. Last night I shot until 2:30 in the morning. As you know, we're shooting, I think it is the final episode of Joe Swanberg's Easy. And it was my third time doing the show as the same character. We take Jacob Malko, comic book artist, graphic novelist, and put him through the mill again. I grew my beard out for it, and me and Jane Addams is there. And Melanie Lynskey came out, literally flew out for one scene to Chicago, and there was a lot hanging in the balance of that scene, and this is all improv. And I love Melanie Lynskey, and I love Jane Addams. I'm working with two of the best actresses around. And I'm nervous, but you know we're improvising in these characters and moving through the emotions, and it was pretty good. It was it was pretty harrowing. Jacob goes down a bit this season, but it was exciting. But nonetheless, shot till 2:30, got back to the hotel at 3:00, had to get a car at 6:45, so got about 2.5 hours, threw all my shit into a bag, and here I am. So look, buying tickets to shows, you're smart people, but go to the site of the show. Do that before you just Google Mark Maron tickets wherever, you know, because you're going to get those scalper sites. And then all of a sudden I get tweets and emails from people going like, why does it cost $900 to get tickets to your show? Oh, because you didn't go to the site of the venue or the site of the festival or the appropriate site for the show that you're speaking of. You went right to a scalper and there's tickets left. So just be aware, man. Anyway, the thing I wanted to clear up on the Shooter Jennings episode. Okay, I get it. I said John Glenn instead of Scott Glenn. Scott Glenn was the guy in Urban Cowboy with the tequila and the worm in his teeth. John Glenn was an astronaut. Oddly, Scott Glenn was in The Right Stuff with Ed Harris playing John Glenn. But, you know, let's not play these games. I'm not a conspiracy theorist. It doesn't mean anything. It's just a fucking coincidence. You can connect the dots to almost anything, right? So John Glenn, played by Ed Harris, was in The Right Stuff with Scott Glenn, which was about the space race, which involved the Russians and Jeff Goldblum, who is a Jew and still is a Jew, but he was working for the government, and the Russians got a rocket up first, and that's why they didn't have anything to do with election tampering. See how easy it is to do that? See, that's their currency. That's how it works. There might be one doofus right-wing guy out there going, that makes sense. I got to watch that movie again because, you know, make America great again, right? So anyways, cleared that up. It was an old man's mistake, and I did it twice, apparently. What is the other thing I want to clear up? Oh, yes. I wanted to read this email because this seems relatively a learning moment for all of us. From the Tanya Donnelly episode, I received an email, midwife versus doula. So glad you explored Tanya's doula adventure. Just want to make a friendly addition to your birth movement data bank. Thank you. Because that one is not filled up. Mark asked if the doula thing was new and then stated that maybe doula is now what a midwife used to be. Just as a clarification, midwives are still around. I happen to be one. Midwives are the actual healthcare providers who catch the baby. Doulas are birth assistants who support women during labor, birth, and postpartum, but they are not healthcare providers and they do not catch babies. Again, thanks for taking the time to explore this with her. We birth workers always love to hear our work being discussed. Kate in San Antonio. Thank you, Kate, for that clarification. And thank you for catching those babies out there. Got to be out there. Someone's got to be out there catching the babies. Okay, so Lou Malnati. Lou Malnati's Pizza. I do this every time I fucking go to Chicago. I got no regrets about it. And here's the interesting thing. Now, you guys been with me a long time. You've heard me talk to a lot of people. And a lot of times we get along great. And that's it. That's the only time I talk to those people. I'm not spending time with them. Occasionally I run into them and I don't even know if they necessarily remember we talked or if it had any impact whatsoever. Usually it does. But I think you can also notice when I really get along with somebody out of nowhere. And you might assume that we've met before, but we haven't. Good examples of this, I think, would be Josh Brolin recently, David Harbour, and Tracy Letts. These are all people that whose work I enjoy, but I, you know, what are you going to do? I don't even have Josh Brolin's email address. I don't have his phone number. I got nothing. I felt like, hey, we could be friends, but then I really thought it through. I mean, can we? What, am I going to go out to the ranch and hang around? Like, I don't know. Maybe we could. I mean, we got along good, but I wouldn't take the first step there to hang out. And also, as you get older, it gets harder, man. It's weird to make friends. And I've only got maybe, how many do I have left? I got a few friends, but I haven't rotated them out. And some of them I don't talk to very often. Some of them are mad at me because I don't talk to them. And it's just, you get busy and you got those two or three friends, man. You better keep watering that garden. But anyway, I'm in Chicago and Tracy Letts lives in Chicago. I'm a big fan of Tracy Letts, genius playwright, great actor. Just, I don't know, man. If you listen to it, we got along. So I figure, what the fuck? I'll text him. I'll tell him I'm in town. He texted me. He said, yeah, let's do it. So we went. Me and Tracy Letts went to Lou Malnati's and had a deep dish. Though he initially was not... You know, I said, do you eat the pizza? He goes, no, I don't. I live here. That's tourist stuff, that deep dish. But I want you to have a good time. And I'm like, you never eat it? Not even once a year, twice a year, you don't eat it? It's like it's tourist stuff. It's like, but it's fucking Lou Malnati's, like the butter crust. I mean, come on. I mean, you know, other people have other opinions, but you're not even telling me that you have another opinion about another place. You're just like, you know, writing the whole thing off as some sort of ride at the Chicago amusement park. But we go, man. We went. And we had it had the Lou Malnati salad and then the deep dish classic with sausage and cheese for two people, and constant refills of Diet Coke and iced tea. And we talked for like 2 hours, a couple hours and change. Had a great time. And it was fucking amazing pizza. He enjoyed the pizza. I don't know if he'll go back again. But what was interesting is we're sitting there, and I got recognized like two or three times, like right off the bat, like maybe even four or five times. And I'm not bragging, but it was sort of interesting because he'd get recognized like once or twice sitting at the table. Then one guy came up and recognized him, and that was the third time. And then the guy looked at me and goes like, "Oh shit, you're that guy from the other thing." And that was, it was exciting. But I started to feel bad because I thought that my count was higher. So I told him maybe we should just hang out till it evens out and then go. And we had a laugh. I guess why I'm telling you this is because sometimes I do become friends with the people I talk to. Most of the time, it's just a good talk. That's all I'm saying. I had a good time in Chicago. Thank you for asking. Joe Coy, like I said, I met him in Montreal. It was interesting, this interview, because, you know, I saw him in Montreal, and, you know, he got an award for the best comedian of the year, I think. He got choked up about it, about his past, about, you know, working with Tiffany Haddish at the Laugh Factory, starting out and stuff. And, you know, he was very emotional. Everyone got a little emotional. I got a little emotional, but that, you know, that happens. But everyone was a little emotional in accepting their awards or giving awards. It was sort of an emotional night for some reason. I mean, he got emotional, Joe Coy did. And then we do this interview, and he's talking about his brother. And it's a very difficult story, what he went through with his older brother. It's difficult. And it's a bit harrowing and sad. And while we were talking, you know, I noticed he was sort of like flat toned about it. You know, it felt like I've been talking to people a long time in here, and I thought, you know, maybe like there was sort of like, it wasn't, the emotion wasn't connected to him talking about his brother, which was a sad and tragic bit of business. And I didn't say anything. Like, you know, what are you, a sociopath? What's happening? But I did notice it. And I didn't say anything after either, but he told me, it's like, he said, like, that stuff about my brother's heavy. I know it's heavy, and I usually get really emotional about it, but today I was just sort of like, I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to get emotional about it. And I'm like, I noticed that. And of all the shows, you're not going to get emotional about it. You chose this one to see if you had the metal to not engage emotionally with the sad story. All right. Okay. But it was a lovely chat, and again, he's currently, Joe Coy is currently on his Break the Mold World Tour through the end of the year, and this is me talking to Joe Coy.
I got to turn this air off. If it gets hot, I'll turn it back on.
Perfect.
You can take it.
No, I'm the guy that hates AC, so.
So you're against air conditioner in general?
I hate it. I lived in Vegas. I'm from Seattle originally.
As a policy, you're an anti-AC guy.
Anti-AC. Because the minute I moved, because I went from Seattle to Vegas, yeah. And when I moved to Vegas, I fell in love with that heat. My allergies went away.
Oh, yeah?
Just everything.
I kind of like it, too, and you feel kind of high all the time.
Yeah.
It's weird.
You feel, I don't know, I feel energized.
Yeah.
When that sun hits your skin, I'm like, let's go, man.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I'm more like, sort of like, oh, let's just slow down.
You want to slow down with the sun?
Yeah, I just want to, like, when I go to Phoenix, where my brother's from, it's 116.
Yeah, let's just stay in.
And I'm outside. I'm like, this is great, but yeah. I'm like, I'm just going to enjoy. Because, like, I just get, so you dehydrate so quickly that your body's just sort of knocked out.
Yeah.
And I'm sober, so I like getting a freebie, you know?
Yeah.
So I'll just
let free, it. Free high from the sun.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, like, the weird thing with you, in terms of my knowledge of things, like, I've always known you're out there. Like I know Joe Coy's out there somewhere, yeah. And I don't know exactly how he's doing or what he does completely, but I know he's like a big comic and he's just sort of out there. I know the name, I know he's popular, but I always like, I'm like, who is that guy?
Yeah,
and like that was always my thing. In terms of like knowing you were out there, and I think we've run into each other over the years.
Yeah,
but we never worked together really, did
never,
we?
No,
because like. I think, I don't know, I was already headlining, you were already headlining, and we just missed each other somehow?
I guess. Well, I mean, you were already big in the game.
I mean, I'm not big. I mean, no, I was known. I don't know. I think you're probably bigger than me pretty quickly. That's my feeling.
It took me a while.
Yeah.
I mean,
But
Nordstrom Rack doing the Tonight Show.
Do you went to Nordstrom Rack?
No, I was working there the day of.
Yeah.
And this is when Jay was there, and you didn't know how big the Tonight Show was.
Yeah, yeah.
Until I got off, you know, the next day, and I'm working, and like every other customer was like, "Oh my God, you were so funny last night." And
oh, then, like,
can I get this in a size 9? Yeah, like, just
do you
brought
have
you
these
back
in
down.
A 10?
Yeah. Do you have this in a narrow?
It's so funny that
like, you don't want to talk about my set.
No, but it's a fundamental lack of respect that people have for comics.
Yeah.
It's just sort of like, oh, nice little thing you did.
Yeah,
but I'm here to get a shirt.
Yeah, if you don't mind.
Not the sort of like, you know, why aren't you out there? No,
care less.
They don't care
less.
They think anyone can do it.
Yeah,
I fucking hate that.
Yeah, I fucking hate it too, Mark, and I'm glad you said that. I'm so sick of someone coming up to me and like, yeah, there's this guy at the office. He's doing comedy too. I don't give a fuck.
Yeah, yeah. He does it on office night.
He's hysterical during lunch. I don't give a fuck.
I know.
This is two different things.
I know,
man.
But you don't say that to him.
No, I'm like, oh, cool. I like to meet him.
Best of luck to him.
Best of luck.
Yeah, I hope it works out for him.
I hope it works out. Yeah.
Yeah. It's really easy. Tell him how easy it is.
Oh, yeah. Go to Elko, Nevada for a night.
But we're like, I didn't know, like, I knew that you were Filipino.
Yeah. Half.
I get it.
Half.
But I knew that you played, this is a thing I think in my head, is I thought you were an ethnic act,
mm-hmm.
fundamentally.
A lot of people did.
Yeah.
But it was so funny because when I first started, I chose not to play the Asian card for like the first 10 years.
Yeah.
Because I already knew I had that in the bag.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I'm like, I can do that all day.
Well, mine's when build the audience and then really.
Yeah. Like, I mean, I'm not going to hone a craft that I already have.
It's right.
Like, my mom is my go-to joke.
Yeah.
My whole life.
Yeah.
So I'm not going to, like, I already knew I had that. So when I first started, I was going after, like, you know, I was so inspired by, you know, Def Jam and Eddie Murphy and Richard Pryor.
That was your thing?
I got on the Def Comedy Jam tour.
Well, let's go back. So, like, your mom's Filipino?
My mom's Filipino. My dad's white.
He's white.
Yeah.
Regular
Air
white?
Air Force white. Air Force.
The
Air
specific Force type of white.
That's the white.
Air Force
that's
white.
That's the white that brought half-breeds to America.
Yeah, of course.
Yes.
Like, they went shopping overseas.
Yes! I always say this on stage, Mark. The Armed Forces is like the original Tinder.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Yeah.
A lot of soldiers were like, you know what? Korea, swipe left. I'm going to the Philippines.
For Asian fetish.
Yeah. But, and no disrespect to my mom and dad. You know what I mean? Hey, that was the time.
It happened.
You
a
have
lot.
To put yourself in that time. People don't get it.
So, all right. So, was your dad in war?
Yeah. Well, my dad was in the Vietnam War. Yeah.
Oh, really?
He was part of that. Yeah.
He was flying?
No, he was loading.
Oh.
My dad had an obsession with cargo planes. It's the weirdest obsession.
So
don't
was,
ask me
he
why.
He was loading cargo planes in
he
Vietnam.
He loved it. He fucking loved it.
So he was probably loading bodies.
And can I? No. Well, mostly, he loaded the commissary.
Oh.
So the food.
So he wasn't really in the
tanks.
Line of fire necessarily.
Well, I mean, they
depend what base he was on.
Yeah, it depends on what base. But the cool thing is, I always ask my dad, because he always told me, he goes, I love cargo planes.
Yeah.
And I always go, Dad, you're full of shit. You didn't get a fighter pilot's license, and you wanted to work near planes.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, I was just being a dick when you were a kid, until I met his dad, and his dad was like, no, that's all he loved.
Cargo
he would
plane?
Build cargo planes, like the model planes. He'd always buy the big ones. My dad had this obsession on, he didn't understand how a plane could get a tank to another place.
Oh, so he's just fascinated.
He was fascinated by that. And he became the loader. He was a master sergeant.
He loaded the plane.
Loaded the plane. And he's good at it. He's a fucking packer, man. He's good. And I got that skill set from him.
I'm
not joking.
You can pack a truck for
I can
you. You
got
to move.
Bro, when they pick our bags up at the airport and I see them just tossing shit on top, I'm like, just go start the fucking car.
Yeah.
Let me load this.
Uh-huh. Or when you see the bags on those like carts before they put them on the plane,
yes.
Like, what the
fuck?
What the fuck
are you guys doing?
Yeah, go on, I can show you.
Get
your
the
tricks.
Big square ones first. Put them at the bottom.
So did you like? So that's sort of an interesting fascination that he just couldn't get it out of his head that they could fly tanks.
Yeah.
So he was fascinated.
Very
with
fascinated.
It.
But like, it's so hard because I try and explain to these kids today, especially my son.
Yeah.
They get to see everything on the internet and it's that fast.
Yeah.
Whereas my dad, it's like, these planes just got built.
Yeah. He had to buy a model. Like Did your kids ever put a model together?
Yeah, he used to build. No, my son never put them. Are you kidding me? Fuck
they
no.
don't do that. $14.95,
you get one that can fly. The goddamn camera. The fuck do I want glue and paint for, Dad?
That's true. You can get a little drone.
This one spies on people, Dad. The fuck are you talking about?
You got to do that in your act.
It's so true, right?
Yeah, it is true.
It's so true. But like, these kids are so spoiled.
I didn't love models. I don't think I ever got to the point where I actually took the time to paint one, but I put a few together.
You know what I mean?
That was it. But there were those dudes that would do the paint.
My dad.
Oh, he did it?
Yeah, paint them first, son. Paint them on the rack.
Right.
Fuck. I put together a green plane. That's all I had.
That's it.
With a green pilot. Give a fuck. I'm not painting this gray thing.
And you still had one piece and you're like, oh, fuck. Oh, where's that one go? How many brothers and sisters do you have?
Man, it's pretty big.
Really?
It's big because I'm the only one that came from my mom and dad. So I'm the only half breed. My mom already came with kids.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
From the Philippines?
Yeah.
How many?
She had my sister and my brother, Robert and Rowena.
Yeah.
So then we adopted another one who's, you know, she runs my business.
Where's she from?
She's from the Philippines.
You adopted a Filipino.
Yeah.
Yeah. And your dad had some or?
Nope.
Oh, so there's four.
He had four. He had one and then the three were like a fucking bonus that he didn't know about.
They just came with the package?
Yeah.
Was that a surprise package? Oh, by the way,
yeah.
As they were leaving, I forgot to tell you something.
Oh, by the way, there's two more. And we're also getting one more. Sorry about that. You know, I shit on my dad a lot and I don't talk about my dad a lot on stage because he did get a divorce when I was like 9, 10. So when he left, it was partially, you know, this is a story I figured out on my own, but it's partially due to racism. You know, he came back from the war with a family.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? He's from Buffalo, New York.
But how did he meet your mom?
Vietnam.
But I mean, I know.
But they were overseas. Overseas.
And she was in Vietnam?
They were in over. Yeah. So they would do this thing where they hire entertainment out there, and she was part of that. She was part of that package, the bands and stuff that go out there.
What part of the package was she?
No, it's
dancer.
Dancing package.
You didn't ask.
What I mean? Let's go.
Was she dancing? Was she playing something?
They were part of like a group that was singing.
Okay.
So yeah, let's give it a that.
Okay. I'm so curious. You never asked. Like exactly? What kind of entertainment was it?
Yeah, my dad told me, and it was part of that whole like they always had entertainers come over and sing. The Filipinos are amazing singers. That's why my sister's a singer.
Isn't the singer from Journey Filipino?
Journey. Yeah, we're that's our thing, man. We're great for like. What is it called when you imitate a song? What is it? Cover bands.
Oh, cover bands.
Notorious for cover bands. So that was my mom.
People love that guy from Journey.
Arnel Pineda, man.
You know him?
I met him twice.
He's a Filipino guy?
Filipino. He's about 4'8".
Yeah. He just sings the shit out of those Journey songs.
And he runs.
Yeah?
Runs.
What do you mean he runs around? He runs around the stage?
And he's running a mile a minute, man. And it's pretty impressive to see someone that can hold a note, especially that range.
Yeah.
That's basically my introduction into entertainment because my mom, when she came to the stage, when they divorced, you know, I say this on stage. I'm sorry. I'm not trying to do shit that I do on stage. But what I say is, you know, before Facebook and MySpace and Instagram, you know, we're talking about 71, 72, 73. Yeah. My mom had to find other Filipinos to associate with.
Sure.
She had to build a community, man. She was walking up to Mexicans, Filipino. She didn't fucking know. you know what I mean?
She started a clubhouse?
She started like a small group of Filipinos. And you know what I mean? It was a group. They called themselves the Filipino American Association.
Where?
It was in Tacoma, Washington.
So your dad came back and moved. He was stationed in Tacoma?
Yeah, we went everywhere. Misawa, Japan. You know, it was military. So every 3 years, we're moving.
In your memory, St. Louis. What do you remember? Which ones?
Man, Tacoma is what I always go to.
So he ended up in Tacoma. And that's
Philippines was also good, too. I remember the Philippines.
Oh, yeah?
Not too much, but I was there for 6 years.
But okay, so you're in Tacoma, and that's when you remember growing up. How old were you when you started growing up?
That is like, it's so funny because that's like the time of my life where it just started to like, everything fell apart. You know what I mean? Our family fell apart.
When you were like nine.
Yeah, I was like 10.
10.
10, yeah.
And you were in the Philippines, you've been to Japan, but you don't remember it.
Don't remember
it.
St. Louis.
Now you're up in the woods.
Now we're in the
Pacific Northwest.
Cold fucking
woods.
I'm sorry if I'm cursing too
much. It's all right, go ahead.
Just cold, raining all the time, depressing.
Yeah, it's heavy up there.
My brother, you know, he's dealing with, you know, we that's when we find out that it's severe schizophrenia.
Oh, really?
And he's it got bad in St. Louis, and then it
how old was he when it hit?
Ah, man, it hit right away. That's why, you know, I was trying to tell you that, like, I understand why my dad left. He's a great guy. I shitted on him for a long time.
Yeah.
But the older you get, you start to understand someone's story. Like, sure. I don't need my dad to tell me. I know.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You're 28 and you marry a woman with two kids.
Yeah.
One's eight. And then right around 12, he becomes he's schizophrenic. He's beating the shit out of you. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I get it.
Yeah.
I get why you left.
Yeah.
I get it. Okay. I respect you. I told him that. I respect you. I get it. And to this day, he still visits my brother the most out of all of us.
Oh,
you go to the logbook at the hospital, you'll see my dad's name there.
Your schizophrenic brother is in the hospital? How old is he now?
He's my eldest. He's 51.
So,
wait, shit. A little older, 52.
Uh-huh. So did they diagnose it correctly early on?
No, I mean, it's also that time, you know, Mark?
Like, yeah.
That time was 1978.
So they didn't know.
They didn't know. You know, and he's just a kid. I still remember that vividly.
What did he do?
When he said he was a tiger, and he was trying to fight my dad, and my mom put me in the room, and I remember laying there, and they were just calling the cops and trying to contain him. And
12.
Yeah, it was about 12.
Uh-huh.
And that was it. That was the start of it. And it was, never looked back.
He believed he was a tiger.
Yeah, it was bad. It was about like 1 a.m, 2 a.m. It was bad, man.
I like that it was sort of an animal that was probably more indigenous to like Asian culture.
Yeah.
than
a fucking grizzly bear.
Right.
Yeah.
He chose a tiger.
Chose a fucking tiger. He said that too. I'm a fucking tiger, Dad. I'm a fucking tiger. It was rough, man.
He's all lit up.
He's a good guy, too, man.
Well, how long did it take? What was the wrangling process? How long did it take to get him diagnosed or get him in the hospital?
It was a lot of cops. A lot of cops at the house.
On and off, you mean?
Off and on. I mean,
because you didn't know.
Nah, you couldn't fuck with my brother, man. Small guy, tiny. He'll fight 6-7 cops. You could not contain that guy.
So this
happened. Punch my dad. He'll knock my dad's block off all the time.
Really?
Yeah, man. Punched my mom in the eye. I remember when she came to the school with a black eye. I was like, God damn, man.
And when did they finally institutionalize him? How old was he?
You know, the state can only hold somebody like that for so long because it's the hospital gets filled quite often. My brother's very smart. He knows how to play the system. So he'll get out and then he'll start a fight. He'll rob. He'll do whatever it takes to go back in.
Uh-huh.
And that's always been my brother's hustle.
But he doesn't like being out, but he wants to get out?
He wants to get out, but when he's out, he knows he needs to get in.
Yeah, because he's
there's a shower there. There's food. You know what I mean?
So he's on and off the streets kind of guy?
Yeah. But my brother, it's hard, man. Yeah,
I can't imagine. Hard. But don't they have...
I shot that special in Tacoma. My sisters were like, let's go visit Robert. I'm like, it's going to bring me in a different space, man.
Oh, before the special?
Yeah.
You got to wait.
I can't.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
It's tough.
But he's in a place now that he can stay?
No, he'll get out. He'll get out. It's just that it's... You know what I mean? It's a routine, Mark.
Right. And what does he do? Live on the streets?
He'll live on the street. They'll put him in a group home, and then he'll get into a fight, and then they'll arrest him, and then the judge will put him in.
They can't get him on medicine for schizophrenia, though? Like, does he still...
My brother's case is worse than anyone can imagine. It's pretty bad.
So he's...
We can call my brother right now, and he'll start off as Robert, and then he'll just go somewhere else. And then it's hard to get off the phone.
Oh, really?
Because,
he's talking about other worlds?
Yeah.
He's delusional.
It'll go somewhere else.
Oh, that's sad.
Yeah, it is. It
in
is
your whole
sad.
Life, it was just sort of that.
Yeah.
And your dad, you feel like, in retrospect...
Well, I hated my dad.
Yeah, for leaving.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I hated his parents. That's why I call him his parents. You know, I never had a relationship with his parents, and he knew that. He cried. My dad cried, too. He said it was the time. You know what I mean? Like, I get it. And then... So I never had a relationship with that side of the family. I don't know anyone on that side of the family.
Because he left at 9.
Yeah, I was 10. I think 10. I was 10. And it just sucked.
Yeah.
And so my mom raised me, and then my aunts raised me. My aunt named me Jokoi. Like, you know what I mean? Like that's where it all came from.
So in Tacoma, your dad takes off. Your mom creates the Filipino-American Club.
She didn't. I'm sorry. I did say that. She didn't create it. She became... part of it. They founded like this group together. It was called the Filipinos. And she's still friends with a lot of them to this day. And But yeah, that's they would hire. They would rent out the Knights of Columbus Hall.
Yeah,
it was. I don't know if you know what that is. It's called the Knights of Columbus Hall, and rented every Sunday. And you know, these families, each family would bring like some type of Filipino food because there was no Filipino restaurants out there. Sure. So everyone would bring some type of food, and then there'd be a big table, and it was potluck. And of course, they'd make the kids entertain. And that was my sister and I would do the most of the entertaining. I would dance, and my sister would sing.
Really?
Every Sunday, yeah.
Were there other kids?
There were other kids, yeah.
So everybody's hanging out, being Filipino.
Yeah, man. Being Filipino, you know, that's so good. Yeah, that's exactly what was going on. And that's why that was the culture that I identified with the most.
Yeah, it's because you grew up in it. There was a big Filipino community in Eagle Rock.
Yeah, yes. Huge.
And I remember that they opened a Filipino restaurant that I went to once, and then it didn't stay open, but it was, I never had anything like it. I don't remember any of it, but it was sort of challenging. Food.
Really?
Well, no, I mean, like,
I got to get you some good food, man. Our chicken adobo is amazing.
Oh, yeah. Okay. That's good. That seems reasonable.
Soy sauce with vinegar and a little bit of garlic.
Yeah. Yeah. That sounds good.
Can't beat it.
But this seemed a little, it seemed a little different. There was some different dish where I was sort of like, that's interesting. I never had that before.
Yeah. Our weird dishes, I don't like to eat. Everyone has it. It's like, you got the didiguans and stuff like
that.
What is that? That's heavy. That's the intestines and stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Like
yeah. Right. It's always that kind of stuff. Brains, intestines.
Yeah. Man.
But the old timers eat it.
Yeah, man. People that come from poverty have to eat it.
And if they're not in poverty anymore, that reminds them that.
It reminds them of being.
They're out.
Yeah,
and now
exactly.
We're eating it because it makes us feel like we did when we were kids.
Yes, man.
It was what made us feel better back then.
Exactly.
This is the best thing we could get.
This is all we can get.
Yeah, that's right.
For this much money.
The intestines.
But you have money now. I know,
but it makes us feel comforted.
Yes.
So it was Tacoma the whole time?
Tacoma is where my dad retired, and that's where they got divorced. And that's where it all started for me.
Well, what were you doing there? Were you derelict?
Just finishing school.
Just hanging out?
I was
high
a derelict.
School?
Yeah.
You're shitty?
I was shitty. I was a good kid.
Yeah.
I was the only kid. I was the youngest kid.
Yeah.
And, you know, like I said, my brother was in and out of the house and getting arrested.
That's just insanity. So, like, he took up a lot of the emotional time of the rest of the family.
Exactly.
Managing your schizophrenic brother.
Yeah.
So, like, you know, you're in that weird position where you got to resent him for being sick.
Yeah. And then I'm resenting my dad for not being there.
So, I imagine everyone's just dealing with Robert, the schizophrenic.
Yeah.
And that took up a lot of energy.
That took a lot of energy.
Oof.
Yeah. So, and I just found myself, you know, I knew I was the funniest guy all the time. So
that's what you did to make sense of things.
Yeah, man.
Keep
I
your
loved
head
it.
Up.
Yep. Yeah. And I was addicted to stand-up. I couldn't get enough of it, man.
Is that how you escaped when you were a kid from the chaos?
Yeah.
You'd watch who were your guys?
All of them. My favorite, of course, this is back when you had the VHS tapes.
VHS tape. Yeah,
and
VHS.
You just put the tape over the... over whatever it was, and then you could record. And then you put it to extended play. You could put, put three or four on there. And I had one. My mom just got HBO. And, of course, it had Bill Cosby himself on there.
Yeah.
It had Robin Williams, Live from the Met. Whoopi Goldberg, Around the World in 18 Motherfucking Days. Delirious was on there. And then I started getting the other stuff that you could rent at these videotape stores. My friend Alan Portugal had a video store rental card. Mm-hmm. And because Blockbuster wasn't out yet.
Right.
And that's when I got Richard. And
a family-owned video store.
I would get Richard, and I got Carlin, and then my addiction just started getting worse and worse. And then Dennis Wolfberg, Brian Regan. I love the storytellers, man.
Yeah.
So Dennis Wolfberg was like one of my favorites.
Great.
Man. Yeah, I loved it. Yeah, I couldn't get enough of that guy. Just the way he would open his eyes when he would deliver something.
It's wild.
Yeah, it was great, man. And the list goes on. I got to see, you know, Chris Rock, you know, before he did Bring the Pain. And
you went, so you're going to shows.
Richard Jenny. Yeah, I was going to it. Yeah.
When you were in high school?
After high school, that's when I started going to the shows in Vegas.
Oh, wait. So when did you end up in Vegas?
89.
Okay.
Yeah.
So your mom moved down there?
Yeah. Everybody moved down there.
Why?
My grandmother had cancer.
Oh.
Yes, it always goes to a depressing stage. I'm sorry, Mark.
It's all right.
But
so you packed
she had
up
cancer
the,
and we
the,
all left.
The sisters and the schizophrenic brother.
Yep, we all moved.
You all went into a car.
Yeah, and then my brother was only there for about 3 months. Not 3 days into the trip, because, he didn't even make it. He didn't even make it.
He didn't?
He got, my mom and him got into a fight in a diner. And my mom gave him all his money. He demanded all the money, all her cash. And she was so fed up. She just gave him whatever the cash she had. And that was it. That's all we saw. That's all we saw of Robert.
And you left him?
Yeah, and I'm probably mixing up a story here, and I'm sorry, but it's okay. That's my brain. It's all over the place.
So you're...
But that was the last time my mom spoke to my brother, and
on the way to Nevada.
Yeah, that was it. Huh. That was it. She wrote him off after that. She was like, I can't deal with it anymore. I need to live my life.
It's a lot of drama for a trip.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, especially going to fun cities like Vegas.
But your grandma's sick.
That was the last time my mom and brother spoke.
Yeah.
You know, she'll occasionally call him every now and then on the phone. But
he's up in Tacoma. He went back
to Tacoma, and that was it.
Wow.
And I'm kind of happy she did that.
It's hard.
Yeah, because we were always yelling at her, like, just let him go. Like, why do you keep bringing him back? Why do you keep opening the door?
Can't help him.
Yeah. And then finally she's like, I'm done. So we were like, thank God, man.
Wow. So you go from the woods to the desert.
And that was everything for me, man. I was so depressed in Seattle.
Yeah.
I was depressed in Tacoma, man. All I had was my comedy tapes, man.
So you were in Seattle or Tacoma?
Well, Tacoma. But anyone from Tacoma says they're from Seattle. That's just how it is.
Wait, because you don't want to sound like a hillbilly?
No, because when you say you're from Tacoma, they're like, where the fuck is that? And then you go, Seattle. Oh, why don't you say that? So I just said it.
Okay. So Nevada was like Nirvana to you, huh? It was just sort of like, I'm here.
Yeah. Yeah. I got to see sun for the first time. I was playing basketball at 1 o'clock in the morning because they have 24-hour parks that are lit and brand new.
Yeah.
And Safeway was open 24/7 and streets were perfect.
Yeah.
And this is before anybody else. This is, the Mirage hasn't even been built yet.
Uh-huh.
So if you can imagine that kind of Vegas.
Right.
It was a
MGM Grand time. Was still there.
MGM Grand was still there before they knocked that thing down.
Yeah.
Because it was called the Marina or something like that.
Yeah.
So, that was my, I loved it, man.
And how old were you when you moved there?
I was 18.
But so, I remember when I saw you accept the, what was it, Comedian of the Year Award?
Stand-up comic of the year. Yeah, stand-up comedian of the year.
At Montreal, that you had told the story about going to see who? Was it Eddie Murphy? Eddie Murphy. Was that in Vegas?
That was in Seattle.
Oh, it was?
It was 1987.
Oh, so right before you moved?
Yeah. And I took my mom's credit card and bought it online. Ticketmaster, you had to call.
Yeah.
You had to call it.
Yeah.
So I called, used my mom's credit card.
Did she know you took it?
She knew I was going to get something for Eddie Murphy. She thought it was a movie.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So, you know, she doesn't know Eddie Murphy does stand up.
Right.
And then as she's driving, like, where the fuck are we watching this movie?
Right.
And I was like, I'm going to a concert. I brought my friend William.
Yeah.
So she had to drop us off in Seattle and just drive around for a couple of hours.
And that was the first, was that the first live show
you saw?
That was
the first live. And I had to beg my friend William to go. Because no one knew kids didn't like stand up back then, man.
Right.
That wasn't a thing. That's something your dad did.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, I get that. Yeah.
And I had to beg William to go. He's like, what's stand up? I don't want to see him. What is that?
Like 16?
Yeah, I was like 16.
Yeah.
And we were like 12 rows from the stage. Man, that concert.
Did he like
Mark,
your friend?
Yeah.
Of course.
Did you know that concert raw?
No.
You didn't get to go.
I didn't see it. Yeah.
But it was all arenas.
Yeah.
You know, he played, it was where the Sonics played. And you know, the red screen where they show a silhouette and he's holding the roses. That was a video screen that played all his hits, all his characters on SNL and all his movies, and it was just to music, and it was just speeding up faster and faster, and bam, it turns red, and he's standing behind it, and I fucking shit myself. I was like, is this really happening?
Yeah.
And then it pulls up slowly, and it's Eddie.
Yeah.
And I'm looking around, there's 20,000 people just cheering. It was over with, man. I'm like, I got to do that. He had a black leather suit on with no t-shirt.
Yeah.
He had driving gloves on.
Yeah.
Leather driving gloves, the kind that, you know, that the Velcro right here by the, and then a diamond ring over the ring, over the gloves. Like, this fucking guy, man.
And he just killed for like an hour and a half?
It was like 2 hours.
Really?
Yeah. It's like 2 hours or something like that. Yeah. It was amazing. Paul Mooney opened for him. Holy shit.
Yeah.
He had a pink fedora on. He sat on the stool for like 40 minutes.
Did all right?
Fucking crushed, man. Yeah. You know, I've never seen anything like that.
You've probably worked with Paul, haven't you?
Oh, yeah, I worked with Paul. But, you know, that's at Laugh Factory and stuff
like
that.
Sure, yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I middled for him once in Sacramento.
How'd that go?
It's good. The thing I learned about Paul, though, is because Sac,
you know, I remember him like from being a doorman at the Comedy Store, seeing him close enough. So I knew who he was, and I knew that, you know, he had found this new life with Chappelle and everybody. And, you know, Eddie respected him, and Richard, obviously. But you work with him in SAC, which is not really, it was not a black crowd.
No.
You know, it's just that punchline up there.
Yeah, right next to the
Arden wall.
Right
mall,
next to the
Arden
the bed. Yeah. Bed store, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, right, exactly. The mattress store in the fucking mall. And, you know, is that like he's doing when he's with white audiences, you know, he'll do like, you know, he'll do 2 hours or more sometimes.
Yeah.
So the thing is like, if you don't think you're racist, he'll find it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He'll find it in you. Yeah. That's his trick.
Yeah.
You know, it's sort of like because it's all driven that way.
Yeah.
So you may think you're open minded, but some of those white audiences are like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
How much of this shit do we got to take?
Yeah.
And I thought it was kind of genius.
Yeah. And he sits there with the calmest posture, man.
Oh, I know. I know.
Doesn't fade him.
Look at you all.
Look at you, motherfucker.
He's something else, man. So, all right. So that blew your mind. But you didn't have a plan after that. You were sort of like, how do I do comedy?
Yeah. I had no idea.
Yeah.
I had no idea.
When did you figure that out?
I called. I just started calling. I called all the comedy clubs and said I could do stand up
in Tacoma or Seattle.
No, in
when you got down
when
there,
when I got to Vegas.
Yeah, to figure out what you had to do.
Yeah,
you want to start.
Yeah,
and where'd they lead you to? Sharippa?
To nowhere.
Nowhere. No one's got it open.
Sharippa would never. No, and I would call him the most because he was the only one that would answer. Everyone else would like send me the voicemail, but for some reason Sharippa would always answer the calls.
Yeah,
and I would end up talking to him, and then one day he was like, "Hey, look, kid, go to L.A., get an act." And then come back to me.
Yeah.
But that we don't have open mics here, all right, kid? But he knew because I would make up different names every time I call him. I make up names all the time.
Why?
I'm Glenn Herbert.
Yeah, why? What were you asking him?
I was just, I would be like, if you have a fallout, I can MC whatever you want.
Oh, right. But you had not been on stage?
Never. I've never been on stage, man.
Yeah.
And then I found out about... this competition was called The Biggest Fool, and it was at the Tropicana Comedy Stop. Do you remember that?
Yeah, a little bit.
It's now the Laugh Factory, but back then it was called the Comedy Stop.
I know that room. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Harry Basil.
Harry Basil.
Yeah.
Right? He was the owner, right?
Yeah, he owns it some part. He's got some part of it. Yeah.
Yeah. And then he had this thing called the Biggest Fool Competition.
Uh-huh.
And what it was is two open micers go head to head during a regular show during the month of March. And then you just keep eliminating. Whoever wins that competition becomes the biggest fool, which is April Fool's Day. You get to open up for a headliner.
Oh,
well,
so
you get to MC or some shit for a headliner.
So they throw you on during a regular show?
Yeah.
Two open micers.
Back going
to back.
Yeah.
For what, 3 minutes?
3 minutes in between the feature and the headliner.
Man.
Or no, before the feature.
Right.
Yeah.
Right after the opener.
Yeah,
we're
right
going to start off with something a little unique.
Yeah, you're going to love this, you guys. These guys, if you think they're going to suck, they are.
Yeah. So that's how you started?
And if you don't laugh, remember, they're not comics.
Yeah. Oh, good. Yeah. Here they are.
Here they are.
How'd you do?
I bombed so bad.
Really?
Yeah.
What were you doing?
Bad. I can't remember. Just
you
sex
really
jokes,
can't remember?
Dick
oh, really?
Jokes. Everything.
So you didn't start with a character or a story?
Nah.
No.
Just right to dick jokes.
Yeah. Nothing.
Nothing. Had nothing.
Didn't win.
Didn't get past a minute. I remember the routine I wrote. I was like, this is at least 35 minutes. How do I scale this down to 3?
Freaked out.
Shit. 30 seconds in.
You're just like, I'm done.
Heart in my mouth.
Do you remember? It's the worst.
I wanted to die, Mark. I still remember that feeling.
It's the worst.
It was the worst feeling. It was packed.
Because you spent like a month thinking about it.
Yeah.
And then you get up there and you're just like.
Yeah. And you know what was crazy, Mark, is seeing the back of the stage. Because you only see the front.
Yeah. Oh, you mean behind, like, the green
room
or
whatever?
Yeah,
when you're backstage, and you're just like, it was like, oh, my God, I'm really here.
I love that part of our business.
I love it.
I love when you walk through the guts of theaters.
Yeah.
Like, oh, this is show business.
So sick.
Like, look at the kitchen. Look at people working in the kitchen.
Look at this.
They got real jobs. Yes. I'm going to go fucking fool some people for an hour. I just love that part of it. Even when you do TV and you're just the guy's holding the curtain, you're like, what's up, man?
Yeah.
We're about to go on TV.
Yeah, man. Make sure they don't see your hand.
Yeah. I always want to see, like, I see, like, you know, over the years, like, you know, you see the same guys doing that, like, on Conan. I've done it a lot.
Yeah.
And man. I always look at him and go, I got nothing, man. I got nothing. Mark Maron.
Oh, shit.
And now he looks at me and goes, what do you got? I'm like, nothing. Got nothing.
I loved it, man. I was addicted.
Yeah. So how did you then make your...
My sister, like I said, she's a singer, and she became a lounge act in Vegas.
What hotel?
Every single one. Every single one. She's got a mouth on her, too.
Yeah.
So it got to the point where my dad and I would always go, when do you think Rowena will get fired? Because
right.
she always got fired from bands.
Uh-huh.
But then another band would hire her because she could sing.
Oh,
she was
good.
So yeah. good. And then she entered this competition called Star Mania, which was basically like Star Search, but it was like the bootleg version. And I go watch her do a competition.
Yeah.
And there's a comedian that she's going up against.
Oh, yeah. Who's that?
I don't even remember. Oh. All I remember is he took his pants off and he had glow-in-the-dark pants.
Oh.
And I remember him going, I need the spotlight guy to turn off the house lights.
Yeah.
Turn off the lights.
Yeah.
And then he pulled his pants down. And
yeah.
I fucking remember that. Like, he had these glow-in-the-dark pants. Yeah. And my sister was like, she didn't even know I was trying to be a comedian.
Right.
And she's like, you should be doing this.
Yeah.
This guy's fucking stupid.
Yeah. Yeah. Stupid.
And but like, she had no idea I was trying to pursue stand-up.
Oh.
At all. Well, and then I entered that contest.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, behind her back. She had no idea.
Yeah, I don't think the glowing pants guy made it.
No, not at all. No.
That was it for him.
Nah.
I don't think he had another thing in him.
He didn't even have a chance on the Biggest Fool competition.
How do you get to the glowing pants? You gotta open with it?
Yeah, no. there was a buildup.
Yeah. So you entered that competition.
Yep, and I still remember the bar. Because what they did is the Star Mania would book these... This show, the Star Mania show at local bars. And then the whole catch was, yeah, if you could just let Star Mania be here on a Tuesday and all these people that enter the competition always bring people and it'll fill your bar.
Yeah.
So I got on this one show and it was on Tropicana and Eastern. The bar's still there.
Yeah.
And the stage is still there. I just went and looked at it the other day.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah, man. I got all teary-eyed. I was like, oh, shit.
Oh, you were just in town?
Yeah, I was just, well, I bought a house out there, too.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
So you live there?
Yeah, I live here.
Yeah.
But I have a restaurant out there too.
Yeah.
So if you want to eat, just go to my restaurant.
Filipino food?
No, it's Japanese.
You bought a Japanese restaurant in Vegas.
What's
restaurant. What's it called? Jokoi's?
It's called Yoje.
Yoje?
Yeah, Yoje.
Did you buy it with partners?
I did, and then I bought them all out.
You did?
Yeah.
Doing all right?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's doing good.
So you're a restaurant owner?
Yeah.
Why the fuck do show business people get into restaurants?
I don't know.
It's a weird thing.
It's fun for me because it was a passion project. And I just love eating. Yeah, and my sister runs it. You know, it's fun.
Oh, so the younger sister.
Yeah, Gemma.
Oh, that's what she does for you.
She runs my shit too.
She runs your business.
My business, yeah. Everything.
Oh.
Everything Jokoi.
And the restaurant.
And the restaurant.
And it's a popular restaurant.
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah.
Where do you get, now, it's a sushi restaurant?
No, it's just shabu shabu.
Oh, so
it's like the Kobe
grill
beef
thing.
And yeah, all yeah. that, yeah.
And is it on the strip, near the strip?
Or? It's off the strip by my house, Summerlin.
So it's by your house?
Yeah.
So you can just drive down the street to your restaurant from your house?
Yes.
And you have a house out here?
Yeah.
Okay.
Shit.
Where do you keep the kids?
My son, my ex and I, you know, I made sure that she lives right next to me.
In Vegas?
No, she lives here in LA.
Okay.
So I have a house and then I moved her right, like literally 5 minutes.
I'm assuming you get along?
Oh, of course.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I didn't want our relationship to be like my mom and dad's. I want a good relationship with her. And
did you end it?
We both did.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, we knew that it wasn't right.
Okay.
But we knew we had to be good parents, so.
So now you live down the street from each other.
Yep.
And then when you want, you can just go to your other house in Vegas and eat shabu shabu.
Yeah.
When you need a break.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I do need that break, man. You do too. Don't even act like...
No, I know.
People don't know how hard this is.
Well, yeah. When you're self-employed, you never really stop working.
No.
Yeah.
And when we do stop working, we think about,
what do we
should be working.
I know. What do we got to do?
Yeah.
Do the thing. But, you know, you run a pretty big operation, but like before, but like, let's get from... So
I entered that competition.
Yeah.
And I bombed again.
Yeah.
I lost to a Lionel Richie impersonator.
Oh.
Yeah. And I love that guy. I wish I knew his name because I was working at a shoe store that day and I remember the same thing. I was like, I got too many jokes here. And I don't even remember. In my head, I envisioned the manager calling, going, this kid, you got to see him. Like a movie moment.
Yeah.
That's what I envisioned.
Sure.
Fuck, it didn't happen. I tanked right when I got on stage and sat next to the guy that went up before me, the Lionel Richie guy. And for some reason, I couldn't leave. I should have left. You know what I mean? It was so bad. I was getting heckled.
Really?
Yeah, it was so bad. And then I wasn't even 21. It was a bar.
Yeah.
I think I was like 18, 19. I like penciled in my mustache, everything to get in.
Yeah.
I didn't have an ID. And I remember they asked me if I wanted anything to drink, and I was like, no, because I didn't want to get carded.
Yeah, yeah.
And then and he was like, hey, man, you got really good stage presence. I remember him saying that.
Yeah.
And that was it.
Like, why? Did he say it like Lionel Richie?
Yeah, he went, hello. But he did. He said that. And I remember, okay, I got it.
Yeah.
I got it, man.
You got that part.
I got stage presence.
Yeah.
And he wasn't lying.
Yeah.
He goes, you have it, man. You got something up there, man. There's something about you, man.
Yeah.
Just work on your jokes. Write some more jokes. And he wasn't a comedian, but he said the right shit to me.
Yeah.
Because I wanted to quit that day.
Oh,
I remember
yeah.
going home. My mom and stepdad were on the couch, and I was all dressed up in a tie and had the fake mustache. And my mom was like, where were you? Where did you go, Joseph?
Yeah.
And I couldn't tell her.
Uh-huh.
I just went right to my room.
So where'd she pick up the stepdad? Vegas?
Tacoma.
Oh.
Another military guy. And I love this guy. He beat the shit out of my brother. So that was the most amazing thing I've ever witnessed.
Robert.
Yeah, because I've never seen anyone throw hands with my brother before.
So your dad splits, your mom gets a new guy, and
And she's still with him to this day. They've been together 35 years.
And she took care, and he beat the shit out of Robert.
Beat the shit out of Robert when he kicked the door down.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And that was good.
When I saw that, I was like, fucking Superman's living with us.
Oh, man.
I dare you to come to this house now, Robert. I mean, imagine being...
So he really...
Imagine being bullied and, you know, terrorized your whole fucking life.
Schizophrenic brother.
Yeah.
So how old were you when she married that guy?
Oh, God. She married him later.
Oh,
you know
yeah.
what I mean? I was like 21 when married him, but they were together since I was like 16, 17.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I get it. Oh, wow. So he stepped in, huh?
Yeah.
All right, so it still doesn't sound like you're getting it together on the stand-up.
No.
Stage. When does that click?
No, it takes a long time.
Well,
how long did it take you? You're a fucking god, by the way, so how did it happen? Like, when
same
did you...
way. You know, like back when I started basically in Boston. There were open mics at clubs. Mm-hmm. That was the only option.
Yeah.
You know, it was to find the clubs that had open mics and then, you know, do them.
Yeah.
So, like, I was doing open mics and, you know, I was out here for a year doing, and I was a non-paid regular at the Comedy Store when I was like 21 or 22.
Yeah.
And I got fucked up and went back to Boston where I went to school, started doing open mics, got, got like 15, 20 minutes together, entered a contest in 88. And came in second, but it was enough to get me opening work at one-nighters. So I kind of pulled together 25, 30 minutes, and I was driving to shitholes to open for two-man shows.
Yeah.
So that's how I became like on the regular road more of a feature act because I did that work. The first work I got was like, all right, you're driving to Maine. You're opening for Kevin Knox.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
You need to do 25 to 30. You got to do 30 minutes. He's going to do 45 and you got to pick him up.
Oh, man. How many of those have I had?
Right. That's how I started.
Oh, man.
But once I got going, then you just have no choice. You got to get the fucking time together.
Yeah. Well, you were blessed because you lived in a big city that had open mics.
It was, yeah, but also had those one-nighters. So, like at that time, those rooms, like there was the road.
Yeah.
But then Boston, like there were three guys that booked like, you know, just pubs and grill, you know, and bowling alleys and fucking hotels.
Yeah.
They were booking agencies for one-nighters all over New England.
Yeah.
So you got in with them and you could fucking, if you did it, if you pulled it off, you could work every week and make a little change, you know?
Yeah.
You weren't going to get famous, but you were paying your
dues.
That's
but Vegas was all about
pro shit.
Yeah, even those shows, the comedy clubs were seven days a week.
Yeah,
so the headliners worked from Monday to Sunday.
Yeah,
it was ridiculous.
Right,
and they would do two on Thursday, two on Friday, two on Saturday, two on Sunday.
Tight.
It was like, yeah,
like they just want people in and out.
In and out. They would rather comp the room just to keep people in their casino.
Right.
So those shows were always packed.
But not great audiences necessarily.
Horrible. Yeah. They were just trying to kill time or they were miserable because they have nothing else to go to. The worst crowd.
So how do you start getting on?
It took a while. And then eventually I found a coffee house that started doing open mics.
Oh, really?
And
a variety show? Or
No,
or
no. They were doing
straight
stand-up. And then and that's where it took off. It was called Buzzy's Cafe.
Uh-huh.
And that's when I noticed a lot of my coworkers were coming to see me.
Right.
And then from then, I started meeting other comics that were opening up other rooms. Like now, this slow...
Oh, so the comic
open mic
shows,
it started opening up. Like this world, I started seeing it.
What year are we talking?
Oh, man, 92, 93.
Uh-huh.
And then And then, yeah, and then that's how I met, you know, this, you know how it is. This comic has a room over here. But they all started having rooms, and I started making 100 here, 100 there. And Rob, this one guy, Rob, was kind of like a headliner that, but only did the B rooms, you know what I mean, in Idaho. And, and he took me to open for him. And there was another guy that wrote for Sinbad, and he took me, and I had to pick him up, just like you said. Yeah. And I had to drive. Right. I remember I was, it was in Elko, Nevada, and, I remember I was getting $100 for a night, but I had to pay for my own gas and I had to drive him back. It was so fucked. And I remember I had to make a decision. Do I eat tonight or do I save this money for breakfast tomorrow? Yeah. Because I want to go home with something. Yeah. I just wanted to go home with like $30.
Right.
Just so I could show my mom I made money.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because if I would have ate dinner and ate breakfast, I would have went home with like $5.
Right.
For sure.
Yeah.
But I wanted to go home with something, so I remember that. Oh, fuck, man. Elko, Nevada, man. Yeah. Red light district for the truckers, man.
Yeah. Rough crowd.
Rough crowd, man. But those were the gigs. And then it just started all coming together. And Kevin Kearney was the one that gave me my first paid gig to open for a headliner at Catch a Rising Star at the MGM Grand.
Wow.
And it was $1,000 for like 12 shows.
Nice.
And I made a Xerox copy of that.
What were you doing, like 10, 15?
I was doing 15.
Yeah?
Yeah, man. And then he gave me, the manager gave me a stack of 2-for-1s.
Yeah.
They were orange 2-for-1 tickets. Hand them to your friends, man. Bring them to, and I was doing it.
Yeah.
And I noticed everyone in line were my friends and fans.
Yeah.
And I'm like, well, they're here to see me, not this guy.
Yeah.
But yet I'm giving the casino money, and then the money they're going to make is more than what I'm getting paid.
Right.
12 shows divided by 1,000. I think I'm making like $90 a show.
Yeah.
So I went and looked for theaters.
Really? On your own?
Uh-huh.
Wow.
And I rented this theater called the Hunt Ridge Theater.
Yeah.
And it was like this old movie theater from like the 50s.
Yeah.
And it's off on Charleston and Maryland Parkway.
And you just rented it?
Rented it, man.
Wow. And then I'm trying to...
Had to take out a loan. I got sponsors.
You did?
Yeah.
And but did it work?
Yeah, I sold it out.
How many seats?
800.
So you just like took it on yourself to promote your own show at the theater.
Yeah.
You just fucking figured it out.
Yeah, man.
And
I just did the math in my head. I'm like, why am I going to let this guy get all the money?
And so like who came?
Everyone I knew. The same people that went to that show.
So that was the beginning of the business.
That's why I can wear every hat. Like,
yeah.
That's why when I knew I could go on the road, I knew I was also able to book the road.
Right.
I knew how.
Yeah.
And I knew if I, just like this Netflix special, when they said no to me, they were like, no, we're good. We already got all our comics for 2017.
Yeah.
As depressed as I was, because I knew that routine was great, and I had to do it now because my son's, you know, if I wait 2 more years, these jokes are dead.
Right, right.
Like these jokes are now.
Yeah, right.
Like my son.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean? He's 12 now, and the jokes are about him being 10.
Yeah, yeah.
Like if you wait 2 more years, he's going to be 18. No, like I got to do it now, and that's why I paid for that special on my own.
So you self-produced your last Netflix special,
yeah.
And they picked it up,
even though they said no. Yeah.
And what was that like?
They
what?
Said absolutely not.
And then how did you get them to?
I didn't care, Mark.
You made.
They
it.
They said absolutely not. We are booked for 2017.
And you went and made it. And then what was the next conversation?
I was. Them? Don't get me wrong. I was so fucking depressed. And I and God bless all the comics that made it that year.
Yeah.
You know, I saw them get their specials, and they're my friends. And
I think I was one.
Yeah, didn't you were do- one. Yeah,
yeah.
And God bless you guys.
Yeah.
But I knew I should have been on there too.
Yeah.
And I was upset that why can't they make mine?
Yeah.
Why? So I just shot it myself, and I was like, fuck it. If they don't get it, then I'll sell it out of the backseat of my car. I've done it before.
But how did you get? Who did you talk to, Robbie? After
why my agent? Well, first of all, God bless Robbie for coming to Netflix, because we all have a relationship with Robbie, and he's a beautiful guy. And
Robbie used to work at the Montreal
Comedy Festival. JFL, and he's a big part of my career. And I shot that thing on my own, and we got it to Robbie just in time to make it during your. During everyone, you know, that was a big year for Netflix stand up.
Yeah.
And I'm just happy that I was on it with you and everybody else.
Yeah. Yeah. It was.
And I wanted to be on that.
Yeah.
Like I was not going to wait. Everyone knew that those specials were coming out in 2017 for Netflix.
Yeah.
Everyone knew that Netflix was going to do a huge stand up push. And for me to be like not on that, I couldn't, man. I have 30 years here, man.
Yeah.
And if I have to do it myself, then I'm going to do it myself. And I did.
And it paid off.
Fuck yeah, it did. And times a million, man.
But you were already like, you know, like through the course of like, so you start doing the theaters like early on, you know, self-promoting yourself, but you still had to figure out how to get a name for yourself. So when did you come out here?
But like I said, Mark, when I first came out to LA, I still went into the factory and I became a factory comic. I never went to the store. I never went to the improv. Jamie had beef with Bud for some reason, yeah, and he was my manager.
Yeah, it's funny. I never go to the factory or the improv. I go to the store.
You only go to the store?
Yeah, I'm a store guy.
You don't do the improv at all?
Not anymore.
No? Okay. But
once I started to sell tickets, I'm like, why should they make any money off of me? They did nothing for me.
Yeah.
I'd rather just go to the store.
Yeah.
And as far as the factory goes, I'm like, I don't even know. Like, I know Jay Day. Like, a lot of these rooms, it's sort of like, who's doing it now?
Yeah.
Who's booking the real room?
Yeah.
And what nights are they actually having real shows?
Yeah.
Know? And I know Jay Davis is down there, but, like, I don't know. The store right now for me is just, they're real crowds.
Yeah.
There's no fucking pay.
Comedy crowds.
Yeah, comedy crowds are, you know, they're diverse and weird.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, like, just real crowds. Like every time, yeah, I'm at the factory, the times I've gone, and they'd let me work there. I could work anywhere at the factory. I'm like, where are all these kids come on the same bus? You know, like I never.
Do they get bused in from UCLA?
No, I don't know where they're from. I don't know what. And the improv, I'm just, that room even is never a great room.
That's the hardest room, I think, hands down.
And now with the new one, it's like,
easiest room is Laugh Factory.
That's true.
Yeah. But I love the small room at the improv now, the workout room.
The front room?
I love it, man.
The lab?
Yeah, the lab.
The bar, yeah, it's nice.
I love it.
Yeah, I mean, I've done a couple shows here and there. I just like the store, like once you figure out how to do the store, it's very rewarding.
Yeah.
All right, so anyway, so you come out here and you just lock in with Jamie?
So yeah, immediately Jamie
charges
me to come to inside the goddamn show.
Oh, really?
Laugh at it. Yeah. I was so fucking pissed. I'm like, I'm just dropping a tape off.
Yeah.
I got a tape. Let me just hand it. I want to hand it. They charge me to go in.
To the show.
To the show. And I'm like, I'm a comic.
To see Dane Cook.
Yeah. He was on that night.
Of course.
And I'm like, I'm just here to drop off a tape, man. It's the show that's after this one. The girl that runs it, her name is Amy Anderson. That's her name. And I just want to get the tape to her, please. And they charged me. That was so depressing. I was just like, come on, man. So, but that, anyways, I got in and Jamie signed me and kind of wouldn't let me go anywhere else. So I was doing that show. I was doing that room 7 days a week, man. I was doing every single show. And then eventually I had to let him go.
He built you up, though.
He got me my Hollywood
presence. But he gave me that stage time. He
gave me a lot of stage time. Out. Yeah.
That's important.
Yeah. Very important.
Yeah.
And then from then I had to let him go because I needed to make money, man. And he wouldn't let me do the improvs.
And you were working at Nordstrom's?
I was working three jobs.
Yeah.
I was working at Nordstrom Rack. I was at Wells Fargo and I was doing this yacht every Saturday and Sunday. People would rent out this yacht and party for like 4 hours and then redock. And then I had to clean it. I had to clean all the forks and had to clean the yacht. Fucking depressing. And then go on stage with my waiter outfit on, you know what I mean? And I was just like, Jamie, I gotta get on the road, man. I got a kid. I got a brand new kid, man. I need to make money and the improv's offering.
Yeah.
So I had to let him go. He didn't understand, but I had to let him go.
He didn't understand?
And I'm now? He didn't understand.
You talk to him now?
Still doesn't talk to me.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It's all good.
I guess, yeah, of course.
The improv, you know,
you assume initially that these people are your friends.
Yeah.
They're not.
Yeah. I just didn't understand how you didn't understand that I need to make money. It's like, come on, man.
Well, I know.
I get you have a beef, but dude.
I know. I don't know. What do you think? What was his plan for you?
I don't know. He said, don't worry, buddy. I'll make you money. You know, there's other gigs out there to make.
I'm like,
where?
Well, when I open the Laugh Factory on the Moon, you can play that
one. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Opening one in Chicago and one in New York.
And
all those places just went dark.
Never happened.
It didn't. Did the one in Chicago happen?
Did you see the one in New York?
Yeah.
Did you ever go to it? It was a strip club.
It was Peep World, I think.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
I got to go, Jamie. That's the best.
Like in the worst,
after I did Peep World, I was like, I got to go.
The worst fucking block.
There's
in this
mirrors.
City. Yeah. It's still like, it's still half a fucking, you got to go upstairs.
Yeah.
It was the weirdest fucking place.
There's a
dude.
Dungeon. Like, what happened here?
I don't know. I don't know whose great idea that was.
It was literally, and then you still got the people that are coming in thinking it's the place.
Wait, is it still there?
Yeah, I don't think so.
No, I don't think it's there.
I don't know what happened to those clubs. There was one in Chicago for a minute.
Oh,
too,
that
right?
died fast.
Yeah. Well, anyway, so, all right, so what's the break? What do? You got a new manager?
I get the new manager. I went through a couple. Guy? I went through a few. I went through a few managers. Improv started taking off. And then, you know, I knew that two for ones and all that stuff wasn't going to build my fan base. Right. That was going to set an image for me.
Yeah.
So I got rid of that right away.
No freebies. Yeah.
Like, if we're going to do this.
That's what I hate about the improv. Like,
well,
okay,
no, you can tell them, though.
I know, but I get it. I don't sell. Well, back when I couldn't sell tickets, they didn't give a fuck. I fuck them.
Yeah.
Anyways, go ahead.
My relationship with the improv.
I have no reason to be resentful. I wish him nothing but good things.
Yeah, you're Mark fucking Maron.
Yeah, I did.
Right. Look at you. I
don't have a Japanese restaurant.
You just have a hit show on Netflix. I told them right away, we can't do two for ones if I'm going to come into the improvs. It's got to be a percentage deal or forget it.
Yeah.
And that's how I did it. I knew that my brand, especially my fans, I felt like once you start saying you're two for one, you're always going to be two for one.
Yeah, they'll get mad at you if you don't do it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I was like, we got to get rid of that now.
Yeah.
So, and that's always been my goal. And I knew what I was worth, and that's when I'm going to give you a show, just pay for it. So there were times where like a Thursday night would have eight people, but I didn't care. And they would ask me, Joe, let's just do two for ones. I'm like, no. Next year, there'll be 16. How's that?
Yeah. So it was that slow. But what was the relationship with the Montreal Comedy Fest? Because it seems like, you know, I didn't realize, because I've been there a few times, but I'm in and out. But when I presented the award for the best writers to the creators of Glow, and you got that award, like, it really seemed like, you know, you have a real relationship with that festival.
Yeah.
That they were, you know, helped you create your
I got my first agent there.
Oh, yeah.
I remember walking off of New Faces and got my first agent.
Yeah.
She walked right up to me and she's like, I want to blah, blah, blah. I want to represent you. And handed me a card, and thank God.
Yeah.
And then Bob and Ross walked up to me and they were like, you're getting the Tonight Show. And
So you got that out of Montreal back when you could still be a new face.
Yeah.
Right.
Back when you were really a new face.
Right, right.
And that was it for me, man. That Tonight Show changed my life.
Interesting. So that was what year?
Oh, God. That was my son, let's say 13 years. It was about 13, 14 years ago.
So it was like, it was the number one show.
Oh, it was Jay huge. Was, I had no idea how huge that show was.
Right.
I got so much stuff from that.
So that's...
I literally got to quit all my jobs.
So you were actually working at Nordstrom's.
Working at Nordstrom the next day. Everybody watched it. So every person that wanted a shoe, every woman that came up and gave me a shoe, and I'm not exaggerating, was like, you were so funny.
That's interesting. So you got in under the wire when that actually made a difference.
Yes.
So that changed your bookings.
Changed my life.
No
man.
Shit.
I got to quit. Like, in 3 months, I was done with all my jobs. I remember I was so scared to quit Wells Fargo. I was so nervous.
Why,
I was
you
like,
insurance or...
Well, I have a son. Yeah, I had insurance. Yeah. I was like, I can't quit, man. Like, I was holding on to it. And then finally, I bit the bullet because it was just, I was getting all these gigs. Improvs wanted me, and I got this commercial deal with Amp Mobile. I was the spokesperson for the cell company. Uh-huh. I was doing all these private gigs for Amp Mobile, and it was nuts, man.
Just blew up.
I couldn't believe how much money. I spent all my money on my teeth. Look at my teeth. I bought, that's for my first big check.
Yeah.
I remember calling my mom going, they want almost $40,000 for my teeth, mom.
Yeah.
And the only reason why I called her, because I knew she would say, no, don't do it.
Yeah.
And she told me yes.
Oh, really? Fix your teeth.
Yeah.
I'm tired of looking at your teeth.
Fix your teeth, please.
So you got the teeth.
She was actually very... It was actually a sweet call.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
She knew what it meant to me that I had such a bad smile. Because I broke all my front teeth when I was like 13. I fell on a rock and cracked all my teeth. So I had this one tooth that wouldn't grow anymore. The other two were yellow. And
ugh.
It was bad. And she knew what it meant. She knew I was trying to do stand-up. She, just get your teeth, Joseph.
Yeah.
You deserve it. My God.
So you got your teeth.
Yeah.
And everything took off. Everything changed.
Yeah. It was crazy.
So you were doing like just but clubs, though.
Clubs, yep,
and the people were coming.
Yes, they were coming big.
So is that when you started, you know, leaning on the Asian thing, or
nope? Still took me a little bit longer. And then when I finally figured out what it was, Mark, is I didn't want to do the comparison jokes.
Yeah,
I didn't want to do like
Filipinos eat like this, and white people eat like, I didn't want to do that. I wanted to figure it out. Like, and it was hard. It was hard for me to figure it out. I wanted to tell stories. I wanted to do chocolate cake.
Yeah.
You know, I want to do Uncle Gus, man.
Yeah, yeah.
And I finally figured it out. I went up on stage and I just told this story about my mom playing the Wii with my son. And I just thought it was the coolest thing to see my mom play Wii with my son and how she wanted it so bad.
Yeah.
Because it was exercise for me. And I had to go buy her this Wii. And I went up on stage and told the whole story. And I was off and running, man.
And it was personal and it was real.
Yeah.
You're drawing from real experience and, you know, you're finding the beats as you go along.
Yeah. And they were working out like jokes. There were callbacks. Yeah. It was a structured joke, but yet it seemed conversational.
It's amazing to build those things.
Yeah, man.
Yeah. And that was it. And I remember changed the whole style.
Yeah. And I remember when my first special came out and I said Game Over, which was the big punchline that I was touring with.
Yeah.
You know, with that joke of her playing the Wii. And I remember... I remember doing the special and then I was like, I have to let this thing go. Like, it's gone.
Right.
Like, I can't do that joke anymore.
It's like Gaffigan in Hot Pockets.
Yes.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. And I'm like, what am I going to do? Like, and that's the whole thing about being a headliner. That's when I was like, okay, let's go. Let's write again. And it's crazy.
How many hours have you turned over?
Oh my God. 10 at least.
Yeah.
Just over and over. Yeah.
That's like gonna be my fourth decade?
And there's hours that I couldn't even, you know what I mean, because from Lights Out to Live from Seattle, no one offered me an hour, and there's so many hours there that I had to drop.
But did you put them on CD? Older.
Nothing, man.
Oh really?
Yeah. You know, there's a joke on Live Seattle that's on Live from Seattle that's so fucking old, and I had to pretend that it was brand new, but I didn't want it to die because I loved that joke so much. I was like, it's gotta live, man.
I hate when they die.
Yeah, like, I do too. It's like losing a kid, man.
I don't think about it too much, but what I started to think about it was that, you know, we all get into this habit of like, we got to get the new hour. And like, then when you do something on TV, even though TV doesn't like matter like it used to, and no one's even fucking watching
No one!
But like, it's sort of like, I can't do that anymore. And then I realized like, fuck that. It took me 6 months
to
get that 12-minute bit working, and now I'm just not going to fucking do it.
Yeah.
So I pulled one out. I pulled it back out.
Did you?
Yeah, because no one never saw it.
Good.
I did it on like John Oliver's comedy special, right?
Yeah.
And like comedy thing on Comedy Central, but like no one's making note of that. No. It's like a great piece and it worked great.
Yeah. That's how I feel about this one that I just did on Jimmy Fallon. And it was so funny because my agent and my fiance, they were all like, you should do it on, it's perfect. It's the perfect joke.
Yeah.
Oh, not on Fallon, on James Corden.
Yeah.
And I was just like, I want that in this new hour.
Oh, you didn't want to burn it.
I didn't want to burn it.
Yeah.
And I did it. And I'm just like, God damn it. Like, to right now, I'm still kicking myself because I'm about to shoot my new hour. And I'm contemplating, do I do it?
Of course.
Like,
why not do it?
I know. I'm going to do it. I'm going to do it.
What's going to happen? Like, three people are going to be like, I saw that one on Fallon. It's like, what do you want from me?
What do you want?
Took me fucking months to get that thing working right.
Yeah, man.
That was up on the, you know, I had that thing, you know, I was working on the undercarriage for a long time.
Dude, I did the sleep apnea bit for about a year and a half.
Yeah.
Just talking about how I have sleep apnea and how I got it and how my mom did it. And then I shot it. And I remember it literally took me a month before I had to take my special to get the damn punchline because it fell weak. It was such a great story.
Yeah.
There's big laughs and everything, but my punchline was just like, oh, okay.
Yeah. I got one.
Nothing.
Yeah.
And then I finally get it. Finally get the punchline, which was a callback from another joke.
Right.
And I forgot to fucking do it on the special. And I wanted to fucking kill myself because it was such, it took me so long to write that thing.
Yeah.
And then I do the special. And I forgot. I remember walking off stage going, you got to be kidding me.
Yeah. That whole chunk.
And everyone was like, oh, God, man, that was a great special. And I'm like, no. Fuck me. Fuck me.
So where's that joke now?
That's on the special. Oh, yeah, I won't do it anymore.
Uh-huh. Oh, you got it on the new one.
Yeah. People don't know how hard we write these things, huh, Mark?
Well, when you
don't you want to punch people in their fucking mouths when they don't understand how hard it is?
Sometimes. Because, like, especially if you do it like you seem to do, like I do, where you're talking things out. So you're talking things out.
Yeah.
Like, because, like, a lot of dudes who write, they're not going to just wait for a fucking punchline to be delivered. But if you do stories, like, you're like, it's strong enough, but I know that the end is weak.
But like the story is still interesting, and it's there's enough laughs there. And then one day it just finishes itself.
Yeah.
And it's a big day.
And you don't know where it came from.
No, you never do. But like not everybody writes like that. But for me, it's sort of like it take, you know, some things are around for a year.
Yeah.
And they tag themselves. And you're like, oh, so that's it.
Yeah.
You know, and then it's done. So, yeah, I don't think people understand the relationship that we have with those things. Mm-hmm. A lot of people who just write jokes, they can throw them away. But if you do long form, it's sort of like, I can't throw that shit away. This isn't disposable.
Uh-uh.
This stuff's all got to work together.
Yeah. And mind you, this doesn't have a shelf life.
Yeah.
This is a joke that can live forever, right?
You want it to.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Chelsea Lately, too, that helped you out
a lot,
right?
Yeah, man, that was crazy. I couldn't believe how popular that show got. And it kind of sucked because when I came to LA, I was in, you know, I was at the Laugh Factory, but I was also doing spots at the Improv, and I was in, and then that Chelsea just, you know, I had my son, and then Chelsea and my special, it erupted.
The first special.
Yeah, yeah. And I was able to make money on the road and I had to leave Hollywood and I think that's why I lost a lot of connection with the guys that I had relationships with, you know,
right,
what I mean,
like, right,
and
right.
It sucked.
But you're a guy though, but you're not, see, you're a working comic,
yeah,
and that's what you do. Mm-hmm. It's not like, you know, like you're not running around auditions.
No.
You know, you're like you're one of those guys like Gaffigan or Regan. It's like that's where your money is.
Yeah.
Is doing the thing.
Yeah.
Not waiting for the thing.
Yeah.
So you know,
we're not gonna wait for the thing.
No, right. So you're out working.
Yeah.
So you lose the connection.
Yeah, and that's what happened.
With the waiting guys.
Mm-hmm. With the waiting guys. And I literally did. I lost connect. It sucked because I had a nice bond with all these comics. You know, that's why when we went to JFL and when Tiffany said that about me, like that was, I started crying
because
that was a part of my life, being at the Laugh Factory and seeing someone like Tiffany Haddish that's broke, you know, but wants to be a comedian. She's trying to make it in this business and I'm buying her hot dogs. Yeah. I didn't know that meant anything to her until she started crying on the stand. Then I started crying
because
I totally forgot I did that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But
it's like a community.
You miss that. I did miss that.
Yeah.
I was lonely on the road. I remember being in St. Charles at the fucking barn at whatever it's called. I can't remember that damn comedy club. You know, St. Charles. Oh, man. I can't remember it. The Funny Bone.
Oh, the Funny Bone.
Funny Bone is St. Charles. It's in the middle of a cornfield or whatever, in a field somewhere.
Oh, I heard about that. Yeah.
And you know, like, you're depressed, you know? You don't have that community anymore. You don't have that your comic friends
to
hang out with.
That's like another fucking universe.
Yeah, man. And, you know,
hotel.
And I'm not able to bring my features yet. Yeah. So now I got to wait for who's opening for me? Yeah. I don't like this guy.
Who's going to try to blow me off stage for a week?
Yeah.
Who's going to make it hard for me every night?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Who wants to become my friend because they want to, you know, but I don't really like them.
Yeah.
You know what it is.
And then, but then the next day you're like, do you want to go to the mall? Or,
yeah. I'll buy you lunch.
What are you doing?
You want to go to Cheesecake Factory?
Yeah.
Fuck.
There's a Chili's.
Yeah, man. There's a Chili's. You like riblets? Fuck. Fuck me.
But that's behind you, dude.
Yeah.
But so, like, where are you now? Like,
it's crazy. Brea, I'm doing my last run at Brea Improv, and I think it's like 600, and it's already sold out. I think we're like 14 shows sold.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
It's crazy, man.
Yeah. So, but are you doing the bigger theaters too?
Yeah. It's great. Lincoln, I just came back. Lincoln, California, I did 10,000 seats.
That's great.
Yeah.
So you're a huge act.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, do you do-
Not everywhere, Mark.
Yeah, I know.
But, you know, I got my spots where I still do the clubs.
Right. But do you find that, like, you know, what's the audience like? Are you, is it a generally ethnic audience?
I pay a lot attention to my Filipino people that come out. It's about 45-50%. And then, like I said, when I first started, I went after, you know, I did Showtime at the Apollo, Def Jam. I did BET's Comic View. And then I started doing Latino nights, and I did the Spanish networks and got on those tours. And then, I waited before I could do the Filipino stuff. I wanted to get those audiences first.
Yeah.
You know, I got the Chelsea Lately. John Lovett's people, I was opening for them. And I every time I opened for somebody, an act like that, I always made sure to like promote myself, man. 10,000 postcards. I would, at the end of the show, I'd run out.
Oh, yeah.
I'd be opening for John Lovett. I'd run out to out in the parking lot. Oh, did you enjoy the show? And just,
oh yeah,
I was establishing my audience, man.
So you
did that. They used to make fun of me. I'm surprised Alonzo Bowden didn't say something during that award, because that was his number one go-to. He would always say that to me. Go out there and hand out your cards, Joe.
Yeah.
And I would go.
What was on the card?
It would just say joecoy.com, and then at that time, whatever, like MySpace or whatever. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and I would hand them out. Boom.
So you did a lot of that.
Left and right, yep.
Now, what about—
I would burn DVDs, Mark, from Fry's. Yeah. I would burn them, and I would give those away for free.
Burn, like from live shows?
No, I would burn whatever I did on TV. I would burn it.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. So like my Showtime at the Apollo and BET's Comic View.
No shit. So you'd spend, like, you buy bulk DVDs. Bulk.
Yep, Fry's. It'd be $100. And then I would print, you know, the folding paper that goes inside the sleeve for a DVD.
Yeah.
I would get 10,000 of those printed up so it would look official.
Uh-huh.
And then I would get, my friend worked at Blockbuster, and he would give me the cases, because they would throw those in
the
garbage
gem boxes.
Bags. Yeah. Yep, I would grab boxes, not boxes, garbage bags full.
Yeah,
and I would just fold them. It was just a little.
You were giving away hundreds a night.
Hundreds a night. And it was so cool. I did a show at some theater, and a lady waited. She took a picture with me. And she had the DVD,
the old one.
Yeah.
No kidding.
Yeah. Took a picture with it and everything, man.
So everywhere you go, so you'd open for a headliner. And you just, like, you'd make sure that they remembered your name. You said you were one of those guys, like, joecoy.com.
Yep. And I would hand a card.
But after, on stage, thank you.
Thank you, I'm Joe Coy, blah, blah, blah. I'll be out front.
Yeah.
I never wanted to sell, too. Never sold. Wasn't worth it to me.
And you still don't sell?
I've never asked a headliner, yo, can I sell myself? I knew it was more important to shake everybody's hands and hand a card to them.
Do you still don't sell?
No, I sell now.
What do you sell?
Just shirts and tees, but I don't really care about it.
Yeah.
It's like, that's just something that's tangible.
Right.
People want. You know what I mean? I still run out. You don't have to buy something to take a picture with me, because I will literally run out into the audience after my show and take pictures with you.
You'll take like 2 hours?
I don't care. Yeah. 2 hours.
Yeah.
I'll do it. I love it, man.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's like, it's worked out for you.
Yeah.
In a big way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A lot of people don't like to do it. I enjoy it, man.
No, I don't mind doing it. But like, you know, when you get, I'm not playing 10,000 seats either.
No.
But I mean, if you're doing, you know, an 800 seater, you kind of know sort of like, well, if I'm going to do that.
Yeah.
It's going to be 2 hours.
Yeah.
And it, like, you know, and there's going to be a lot of pictures of strangers and a tired me.
Yeah.
Like you start,
yeah.
You start seeing those pictures of just people with you, and you're like half, like, you know, one eye's open. Like, it's just after a show, you know?
They don't know how tired we are, man.
I know.
They don't know that hour on stage is tiring.
I don't know either until I see those pictures. I'm like, oh my God, I thought I was getting away with something, you know?
Yes. So true. I don't want you to think I play all 10,000 seats. I've been blessed to
spread them out.
Yeah, there's a lot of markets I've been blessed, man.
Yeah.
I'm so honored to say that, you know, there's a city in between Seattle and Tacoma called Kent.
Yeah.
And they built a brand new arena. It's a hockey arena.
Yeah.
And I sold it out twice. It was like 11,000 tickets.
Uh-huh.
And they painted my 10-foot mural.
Uh-huh.
It says 2 sold out shows. And that's kind of like my, like, when I saw that, I was just like, when I was 15, I saw Eddie Murphy, and it happened. Because I remember, Mark, I remember looking at the 300 section going, that's impossible.
Right.
There's no way anyone can do that.
Yeah.
And so for me to be able to be like, man, if you could dream it, it can happen.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, man.
And it's like a good homecoming.
And it's always there. Every game, whatever concert that goes into that venue, they get to see
it. Oh, they leave it there?
Oh, they painted it. It's on their wall in the hallway, man.
Oh, that's nice. Local boy.
Yeah, man.
Oh, so, but you get along with your dad now?
Oh, man. Like I said, man, you know, we both cried.
Yeah.
It was right around, I think I was like 21-ish.
Yeah.
And we both cried. And I told my dad, I go, dude, I get it, man. I get it.
Yeah.
You don't have to tell me.
Yeah.
I wrote the story. I get it, dude. Yeah. I would never want to be in that situation. At your age, I get it. I probably would have walked away too.
Yeah.
But he's been the biggest supporter of my stand-up career ever since.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah. I remember he maxed out a Visa card just to buy me a website.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It was like $5,000.
Yeah.
And that website could have been free.
Yeah.
But I got ripped off by some guy, but he charged us $5,000. But I remember my dad was like, all right, here. And he maxed out this credit card and gave me $5,000 to pay this guy to make my website.
Because
I told my dad, I go, Dad, I need a website because a website's going to tell the world who I am.
Yeah, sure. Shit. Did you pay him back?
No. He owed me, goddammit.
There you go. And all right, well, great.
How cool is it that when you said I knew of you, but I didn't know who you were?
Yeah.
And I'm like, I know that because when we got on the plane to JFL, I was moving my jacket for you. And you were like, thanks, buddy.
No, I didn't quite put it together.
Hey, thanks. Thanks, pal. Thanks for making space for my suit.
That's true. That was you, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Was it? Were you wearing a hat?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
I really didn't recognize you.
Yeah.
You're like right across from
me. I didn't care, man. You had your suit, and I'm like, Mark needs to put his suit. He needs to hang his suit,
goddammit.
But you
were wearing a hat. You had glasses on.
Yeah.
And you had something around your neck, and you did not look like you.
Yeah.
Like, you know, and I was wondering, like, who the fuck is that guy? But then when you took your hat off and I saw you at the thing and you didn't have glasses on.
Yeah.
I was like, I know who you are.
Oh, okay. Just not at that time.
No, I didn't. That was you.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry, buddy.
No.
Yeah.
I was honored to move my suit for you.
But thanks, pal.
Yeah.
That's it, man. He's selling out the entire state of Hawaii, that guy. Wow. It was nice to meet him. Nice guy. Solid dude. So, also, I believe there's still tickets for some shows. I mean, most of the stuff sold out. Comedy Works in Denver, September 21 and 22. If you're in Denver and you want to see me, I would grab those. Stand Up Live in Phoenix, Arizona. I would grab those. Also, I will be at the New York Comedy Festival, Saturday, November 10th. At the Beacon Theater. Buy tickets, but go to nycomedyfestival.com and get the link there. Don't just search it and end up at wherever it is, StubHub or whatever, and then ask me why is it $2,000 for a seat. All right, just go get the correctly priced ones for the event that's not sold out, and, you know, don't complain. All right? Okay. Should I play?
Boomer lives.
Tired, man.